So we'll do our prayers. And first, we'll bring our minds to rest a little bit so that we can do our prayers with vigilance and mindfulness. So letting our attention descend. Well, first, sort of checking in with our posture, getting comfortable. That's always the first thing. Spine straight, body relaxed, hands in a stable position and so forth. That alone brings us to rest a little bit, just checking in like that, stabilizing our posture, and then letting our attention sink once again into awareness of our body in this present moment of awareness. And letting our thoughts settle so that there's a clear field for doing our prayers with full mindfulness, full attention. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken. Through all the virtues such as giving, may I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken. Through all the virtues such as giving, may I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken. Through all the virtues such as giving, may I reach Buddhahood for beings. Prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, urging, supplicating, whatever virtue I've collected, I dedicate it to awakening. The ground perfumed and strewn with flowers, Meru, four continents, sun and moon, this imagined Buddha field offering, may all beings dwell in the pure realms according to the different propensities of beings. Please turn the wheel of Dharma, great, lesser, and uncommon. Dadan Sarshan Tam Che Lo Che Su Dror Zin Ji Lap Du Sol Che Lam Du Dror Zin Ji Lap Du Sol Am Chul Pa Sa War Zin Ji Lap Du Sol Tu Pa Ye She Su Char War Zin Ji Lap Du Sol. I pray for blessing, may my mind and the minds of all sentient beings turn toward the Dharma. I pray for blessing, may the Dharma become the path. I pray for blessing, may the path clarify confusion. I pray for blessing, may confusion arise as wisdom. Lai ke dang lu dang nu jin ke chubum da da mi ke nam dang drawa kunji dra ke jit sam par tam che ke du da ki cha tan to. In the tongues of Nagas, Yakshas, gods, those of humans and of demons too, in the many languages there are, may I teach the Dharma in them all. And the reminder for arousing bodhicitta. Let us begin by giving rise to the thought that in order to benefit all sentient beings whose numbers fill the extent of space, I must attain the level of perfect enlightenment. In order to bring this about, I will practice the profound Mahayana Dharma by way of study, contemplation, and meditation. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May they be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May they never lose touch with true happiness, which harbors no suffering. May they come to rest in vast, impartial equanimity, free from attachment and aversion. So today's meditation is going to be a little different. I recommend that we still do the two wings of awakening, but everybody's going to do their own. We're just going to have like a 10-minute meditation. So I recommend that you go over the four thoughts in your mind, because we all know them by now, and then request the blessings of the guru, and then bring the mind to rest in ultimate bodhicitta by whatever means you want to do that, and do some taking and sending, and I will ring the gong at the beginning and the end. So again, checking in with our posture and remembering verse 29, the paramita of meditation. Meditation depends upon isolation of the body, which we all have in our space and our posture, and isolation of the mind, which means resolving not to be carried away by thoughts, resolving to be vigilant and mindful of what we're doing in the meditation, what we've chosen to do in the meditation. So mindfulness and vigilance should be in full operation as we meditate. And I'll ring the gong. Well, I suggest that during our 2 month break, everybody continue to meditate. I'm sure everybody here has an established practice, but everybody continue to do 15 minutes a day is really good to shoot for as a minimum for meditation. And you can use the Two Wings of Awakening handout. If anybody needs that, I can send it out again, or you can just do whatever meditation routine you usually do. But I hope everybody will keep their practice going continuously during the break between topics. Does anybody have any comments on the meditation or anything else before we chant the verses? All right, then I will share the screen. And for the last time, we'll chant the 37 verses together. We should probably form a club for getting together once a week and chanting the verses. And as you know, if you've been reading my emails, I'm going to ask those who wish to share if there's a particular verse that has resonated the most with you throughout this year of study and, you know, having gotten to the end of the text. So if you haven't had a chance to think about that yet, as we're chanting them, you might notice if there is one that has really affected your practice and your life more than others. This precious human life so hard to find, its freedoms and resources like a boat to navigate samsara's endless sea and set myself and other beings free without distraction always day and night to study, contemplate, and meditate. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. While those I love can stir up a tsunami, and those I hate can burn me up like fire. When I don't care, I lose my moral compass, and dark delusion permeates my mind. To leave behind my habits and reactions, this homeland where I've dwelt from life to life, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. When I avoid conditions that disturb me, emotional afflictions lose their strength. When there are no distractions to engage me, my dharma practice grows to fill the space. Awareness knowing Rigpa clarifies, and certainty in dharma dawns and thrives. On solitude and silence to rely, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. Old friends I've known as long as I remember, one day we'll have to go our separate ways. Material possessions I've worked hard for will be enjoyed by someone else one day. This consciousness, a guest, will leave my body, the guest house where for all my life it stayed. To let go of attachment to this lifetime, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. When I'm with friends who strengthen the three poisons, reflection, study, meditation fade. Kindness and compassion are forgotten, and I'm caught up again in worldly aims. Not following the friends who harm my practice, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. When I rely on spiritual friends, my faults and negative behaviors wane. Constructive qualities and skills expand, just like the brilliance of the waxing moon. To hold authentic dharma friends more dear than even my own physical welfare, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. Who can the worldly deities protect, themselves imprisoned in samsara's jail? The three jewels which embody freedom's path, reliable protection without fail, to seek refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. The sufferings of the three lower realms, be states of mind so difficult to bear, according to the teachings of the sage, are the result of actions that cause harm. Therefore, even with my own life at stake, from harmful actions always to refrain, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. Like drops of dew upon each blade of grass, the three realms' happiness evaporates. In contrast, the supreme and highest state of liberation doesn't ever change. To strive in all our efforts to be free, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. My mothers, each and every sentient being, since time without beginning cared for me. How can I be happy while they're suffering? I must get to work to set them free, to cultivate the mind of full awakening. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. The source of every single suffering is wishing for my happiness alone, while focusing on others' benefit gives rise to Buddhahood awakening, to fully and wholeheartedly exchange my happiness for others' suffering. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. If someone driven by intense desire steals all my wealth or instigates the theft, to dedicate to them from all three times my wealth, good deeds, and merit, everything, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. Though I've not done the slightest thing that's wrong, without a cause someone cuts off my head, to generate compassion in my heart and take upon myself all their misdeeds, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. If someone slanders me and spreads the word, maligning me throughout the universe, to pay them back, I fill my heart with love, extolling their good traits and character. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. If someone tells a crowd my hidden faults and speaks of me with undisguised contempt, to see them as my spiritual friend and bow sincerely with respect to them, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. If someone I've cared for as my own child turns on me as their worst enemy, then like a mother when her child is ill, to shower them with more love than before, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. Whoops, hitting the wrong key. If someone, my inferior or peer, through pride disparages and puts me down, to honor them as I would my teacher and place them reverently on my crown, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. When I've lost everything and everyone abuses me and treats me with contempt, I'm stricken by disease and very sick, on top of that, a demon's in my head, to take on all the suffering of beings, completely free of all discouragement, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. Though I've achieved the pinnacle of fame, and the whole world bows down to me in awe, I'm rich beyond my very wildest dreams. Whatever money buys, I have it all. To see that there's no essence in success, and never think I'm better than the rest, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. Oops, nope. Sorry for the extra scrolling. If I don't tame my inner enemy, the poison of aggression, anger, hate, then outer enemies just multiply. No matter how to vanquish them, I fight to tame my own mind with an army of the forces of compassion, kindness, love. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. Since pleasures and desire are like salt water, the more I drink them in, the more I crave. Therefore, the moment that attachment stirs, to drop it right away without a pause. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. All appearances are my own mind. Mind's nature from the start is concept-free. To know my own mind's nature and refrain from grasping onto subject-object signs, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. When I encounter something that's delightful, such as a rainbow on a summer day, to give up all attachment to its beauty and never cling to it as truly real, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. All forms of suffering are just like dreaming that my beloved child has passed away. Appearances like these are just delusions. To take them as true drains my energy. When I encounter adverse circumstances, to see them as delusions of my mind, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. If wishing to attain awakening, I need to give even my body up, then doesn't it go also without saying that this applies to mere external stuff, without hope for reward or benefit, to generously give away a gift, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. If through a lack of ethical conduct, I can't accomplish my own benefit, then any aspiration to achieve the benefit of others is a joke. To keep and guard my ethical conduct completely free from worldly influence, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. For bodhisattvas wishing to accrue a wealth of wholesome virtue and good deeds, all harm is like a precious treasure trove from other people or adversity. To cultivate a patient attitude, not feeling irritated or abused, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. If listeners and solitary Buddhas, in striving just for their own benefit, are seen to focus with the same resolve as putting out a fire on their head, since my aim is to benefit all beings, and effort is the source of all good traits, I must engage with joyful perseverance. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. To vanquish my emotionality, I need insight based in tranquility. To understand this and to cultivate a stable, focused meditative state, not getting stuck in the four formless realms, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. The five perfections lacking inner wisdom are not enough for full awakening. To cultivate the wisdom of true knowing, united with the path of skillful means, and not conceive the three parameters, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. Whoops. If I don't look into my own confusion, I could be just a Buddhist counterfeit, a person who has all the outer trappings, but doesn't act the way the Buddha taught, to always analyze my own confusion, and then take measures to abandon it. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. If I, compelled by reactivity, relate another bodhisattva's fault, it undermines my own integrity, and I myself decline as a result, to never speak of faults or of mistakes of someone on the Mahayana path. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. When I am swayed by honor and reward, I may fall prey to quarrels and discord, and motivation may disintegrate to study, contemplate, and meditate, abandoning attachment to domains of benefactors, relatives, and friends. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. Harsh words, besides upsetting other people, impair my bodhisattva practice too. To give up speech that's harsh, rude, or abusive, unpleasant for recipients to hear. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. Once reactivity becomes a habit, it's hard to turn its energy around. To overpower it without delay by wielding mindfulness and vigilance, the moment a reaction first begins, attachment or another poison, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. To sum it up, whatever I am doing in all my conduct and my practices, through constant mindfulness and vigilance, to monitor the state of mind I'm in, directing it to others' benefit, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. In order to dispel the suffering of beings numberless as space is vast, to dedicate the merit of my practice to everyone's complete awakening, with wisdom purified of the three domains, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. And we'll end with the verse from Shantideva's dedication chapter. However long the sky endures, and there are beings to be found, may I continue to remain, dispelling all their suffering. Okay, does anybody have a verse they would like to talk about, or any other feedback about the course or your experience with it or the 37 practices? Anybody have anything they'd like to share? If not, we'll talk about my favorite verses. Do you want me to talk about mine first? So I see Lama Jinzong and then Kathy. Okay, Lama Jinzong, you're on.
Okay, I think it's number two, which is, which has to do a lot with 35. So I don't have it in front of me. So if maybe you could read 2 and 35, the one about the homeland, and then
yes, homeland. Yes, I will read it. Theoretically, I know it by heart, but
no,
I trust myself on the. Okay, so to leave my homeland while those I love can stir up a tsunami. And those I hate can burn me up like fire. When I don't care, I lose my moral compass, and dark delusion permeates my mind. To leave behind my habits and reactions, this homeland where I've dwelt from life to life, this is the way a bodhisattva trains.
So that, for me personally, I mean, as you said, that's the comfort zone, you know, everything I've known and come to enjoy, or at least, you know, it's so deeply inside that these coping mechanisms that when you get to verse 35, which is about using vigilance and mindfulness, correct, to look in words.
Yes, yes.
It speaks to you putting the last date, today's last blog thing about the loophole that there's, that there's like, you know, of course there's the mindfulness that knows what to take up and what to abandon. And then there's vigilance that knows, is conscious of what your body, speech, and mind are doing. So you know whether they're doing it, but the real issue is the resistance to doing the right thing, which is leaving your homeland, your comfort zone of responses. So that's so deep. It's so difficult to give up.
Yeah. Well, that's the core of the practice right there. I mean, you could maybe say that about any verse, but I'll read 35 just for a reminder, because they are really closely related and I had not really picked up on that before, so thank you. Once reactivity becomes a habit, and that's the same reactivity we're talking about that's our homeland. We've been doing these same patterns life after life after life. Once reactivity becomes a habit, it's hard to turn its energy around. So our job is to overpower it without delay by wielding mindfulness and vigilance. The moment a reaction first begins, attachment or another poison, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. That's our job. That's our job right there in one verse. So that's how we leave our homeland. That's the way that we implement like all the verses, really. So anything further, Lama Jinzong?
No, just that the difficulty of knowing the right thing to do and then actually wanting to do the right thing.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to go to Kathy, and then I saw Marilyn had her hand up, and then we'll catch anybody else. Okay, Kathy, sorry.
So I was just, you kind of just threw out that maybe having a week every day has
a club. Yeah,
a club. I like that. I would like to be in the club. So
okay. Well, I mean, I could spare like a half hour a week to talk about the 37 practices, to chant the verses together. So we'll have a sign
that
up.
That would be great.
We'll have a sign up. Okay. I was sort of kidding, but it actually, you know, it would be a nice thing to do. Really keep them alive.
Yeah.
Okay. So anything else, Kathy, or was that?
I just wanted to throw that out.
Okay. I'm going to mute you and open up Marilyn's mic.
I'd just like to say, Jinzhong, we're Dharma sisters, because those are the two verses that I chose to.
Wow. Do you have any? Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, it's saying so clearly our vowing to let go of habits. I mean, like, it just says it so clearly, let go of habits and reactions and watch what we're doing. And it's just so on. Right on.
Yeah.
That's it.
And so theoretical. All right. I saw Angela. Was that? Oh, this is Joanne. I'm unmuting you.
All right. I guess in relating to Lama and the, what was the lady that just spoke?
That's Marilyn. Marilyn, yeah. In Washington, D.C.
All right. I kind of, there was a few, but number four.
Okay. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Not so much, well, yeah, homeland, but again, my friends, my attachments, hopefully with more serious meditation, it will prepare me for the losses that I'm going to endure, and I have to reconcile myself with that.
Yeah.
So just as we deal with physical ailments, we also have those emotional periods in our lives, and I'm hoping that I will be more prepared.
I think you will be, Joanne.
and also the link to the Diamond Sutra, that I'm certainly, the translation is excellent, but I'm seeking a commentary.
Oh.
So
I think I have one, but it's in a book form. Maybe I can send it to
you. I thought maybe it's something of an oral nature that I can listen to.
Oh, I see. Yes.
I'll keep communicating with
you. Yeah, we'll communicate about that. It's not something that's been taught like by Lama Norla Rinpoche or anybody that, you know, they don't usually teach the sutras, but it is an amazing sutra. So anyway, we'll talk about that. Do you have the verses in front of you that you'd like to read us verse four, or would you prefer I do that?
I have verse four.
Okay.
In front of me, your text, as well as...
pick any translation.
Okay, you want me to read it?
Yes, if you'd like. I mean, I can do it, but remind us of what verse 4 says.
Old friends I've known as long as I remember, one day we'll have to go our separate ways. Material possessions I've worked hard for will be enjoyed by someone else one day. This consciousness of guest will leave my body, the guest house where for all my life it stayed. To let go of attachment to this lifetime, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. And that touches my heartstrings.
Oh my God, it did mine too. I was just going to say, I don't know if it's the way you read it or the fact that it's not like just jaunting along as a little verse that we sing with a tune, but I was really affected by that. It's like, that's so sad. We really have to give everybody and everything up.
That's exactly
it. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, I see Lama Jinlei. Anybody who hasn't spoken yet wanted to say anything? I'm going to unmute you, Lama. Dan. I'm going to go to Dan first and then Lama Jinlei.
Good. Verse 24, 24, to regard adverse circumstances as delusions. So
yeah.
I tend to create a lot of interesting scenarios in my head. So. And they really zap your energy.
Well, when you have a young child, you do. I mean, you can really relate to the whole way the verse is expressed, I'm sure.
Yeah. So that one I spent a lot of time, 22 to 24, actually.
Yeah.
That section. So
Yeah, those are the ultimate bodhicitta verses. Mm-hmm. It sounds busy in your background, but if you have them in front of you and you want to read them, or read verse 24.
Yeah, Clem just started yelling at me for the first time when I started. So, Clem, give me 1 second, okay? Do you want me to read the whole thing? All of them?
Sure.
Or just the...
I think all of them would be good. 22 is the meditation verse, and then 22.
Yeah, to remain free from subject, object, fixation. Can't talk. 23 is to give up attachment to positive experience. 24 is to regard adverse circumstances as delusion.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
1 second, honey. Right. Sorry. I'm going to go tend to her real quick.
Okay, yeah. So we'll say hi to Clementine for all of us.
I will. Clem, you want to say hi to everybody?
No. Oh, Clementine. Hi, Clem. I just She's saw like, her in person on Sunday.
And hopefully we can go this Sunday to the garden still. So
that would be great.
Yeah. All right. I'll see you in a second.
Okay. All right. Lama Jinzong, I think you were next.
I just wanted to speak to, oh no, it's terrible. I can only remember Christopher's mom. I forget your name.
Joanne.
Yeah,
Joanne.
You know, a reminder is that even though it's saying giving up old friends, it's, you know, part of it is that it's not that we're renouncing attachment to old friends or places or anything, is we're giving up our steadfast belief in them being an unchanging, you know, true source of permanent happiness. So that by working with reminding ourselves that everything in our experience is not that single unchanging true source of happiness, we can feel a little less attached to it, because we don't have the same level of expectation. So not that we're all going to feel loss, obviously, those of us who've lost parents and friends before, children, God forbid, but the reality is like, so if you can at least work on the idea that, you know, keep trying, and I speak to myself, I forget you, it's all about me, isn't it? Is that give up the, or try to work towards the feeling that I love or I care for these types of phenomena, but they're not ultimate sources of happiness. And if we can train ourselves in this way, some of our attachment will lessen and our expectations will lessen it. And like Lama Norla Rinpoche used to say, the level of suffering is directly related to your level of attachment. So that's just what I was thinking. Yes.
Thank you. Joanne, did you have something to say? Okay, I want to share a story. Joanna, go ahead, please.
Oh, no, I have nothing. I'm taking it all in.
Okay. Sorry, I think I muted you prematurely, but I just want to tell a story of something Lama Norla Rinpoche said along those lines, which is many of you know Ani Shewang, and I've probably told this story before where some of you may have heard it, but everybody knows, most of us know Ani Shewang, she's been with Lama Norla Rinpoche for many years, and she was going into 3-year retreat in 1995, and I lived in New Hamburg near the monastery, and she decided that I should take care of her fish. She had like a big goldfish in a big tank, and the goldfish had its swim bladder had died or something, so it floated upside down all the time, but it was, you know, its name was Shepa, which means awareness. So this fish lived with me for a while. I cleaned its tank, I took care of the fish, and one day the fish was dead, like, you know, a few months into Shewang's retreat, the fish was dead. And so I was like, well, we have to now tell Shewang that her fish is dead. And so, and I called Lama Norla Rinpoche and told him that Shewang's fish had died. And he said, oh, how are you feeling? And I didn't know what to say. And I just said, well, I guess it's sad. It was a nice fish. And he said, all fish nice. Like, don't be attached to one fish. All sentient beings nice. Oh, it was very fun. I really wasn't that attached to the fish, but you do feel a pang. You feel a pang when something passes from this world, especially if you have a relationship with it. But anyway, thank you, Lama Jinzong. I think you expressed very well how we actually train for that moment when we do lose someone or something. Yes, Marilyn.
some of you, probably very few of you, know that Patrick and I lead healing circles for grief and loss at our home, and we've been doing that for quite some time now. But it's so clear that Buddhists are so much better prepared for grieving loss and all these things. And since we say we don't discuss politics or religion, for Buddhism per se is off the table, but it just is so relevant so much of the time that we almost have to restrain ourselves from talking about it. But we are so much better, and Mark is part of that group too, so much better prepared than a lot of people. So that speaks to that number four.
Yeah. Joanne, I'm going to unmute you.
If the participants, Marilyn and everyone else, have a chance to read Traveling the Path of Compassion, which you have used as a resource, Chapter 8, Letting Go of Worldly Concerns. I like the way he ended the chapter, and it's very comforting.
Do you want to just read that to us?
Well, actually, I'll just read one sentence.
Okay. This is from His Holiness Karmapa's book, right? Traveling the Path of Compassion. Yes. Okay.
All right. As far as loss, it is a natural thing. This feeling is not something that comes from religion. It is our love that leads us to believe that there is something naturally inborn that is not finished when we die. Whether we are thinking about ourselves or about others, we have a very strong feeling that there is something that does not end. We do not see ourselves as a candle that is finished when the last flame goes out, but as a torch, a light shining everywhere that can be transferred one bright flame to the next. I believe that this is the way, this way of thinking is very important. And he doesn't dismiss people communicating with people that they've lost, you know, that they carry a torch, but it's a very real thing. And he doesn't dismiss it and say that, you know, we shouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. But that bringing light into the world, that's what his thrust was. And I think people need to read the entire chapter to get the full meaning. But he was very understanding, a typical humility.
Yes. Okay, thank you so much. We haven't used that book as a resource as much as we probably should have, because I felt that Dingo Chensei Rinpoche's book was so comprehensive and we couldn't like have too many primary resources, but I've been looking at it for the last few verses, especially since his teachings, and it really is a very profound book. So I recommend, I mean, if you want to keep in touch with the 37 practices, there's lots of commentaries out there. If you don't have, like if there's commentaries you don't have, you could read another one. And His Holiness Karmapa's is very short. It's very concise, very short, and very pithy, and very compassionate.
All right. Thank you, Mama.
Okay, thank you, Joanne. Anne, I'm unmuting you.
Could you give me the title of that book again? The Karmapa's book?
Well, it's Traveling the Path of Compassion. This is what
okay.
It looks like.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Highly recommended.
Thanks.
And of course, if anyone hasn't read Ken MacLeod's Silver River yet, Reflections on Silver River, which is a play on Lilchu Tokme Zongpo's name, that's a really good one from a Western point of view, too. Anybody, did I miss anybody? Anybody have anything?
I have one thing.
Okay. Oh, yes, Mark, please.
If I may. Yeah. So I hope this is not too much out of context, but that same mind, you know, the one that goes on between incarnations and stuff, there's, according to stuff I've been reading recently, there's no difference between that mind and the mind that is suffering.
Right.
So it's all coming from the same source, in other words. So if you can take that perspective, then it can really, you know, bring joy immediately if you just do it. Which is sort of like a not meditating and not, it's just having a recognition that it's always the same source, whether it's bringing suffering or bringing bringing bliss. That's all.
Okay, thank you for that comment, Mark. Anybody else? Oh, Angela, I'm going to unmute you. All right.
Mine, I guess the most effective one would be the line 27. It's just one of those six perfectionists to cultivate patience.
Oh, yeah.
And I really like the Karmapa, the way it really stuck with me when I watched his, and he was talking about how when you don't have patience, you think you're better than someone else. Like, it really throws off your equanimity. And to me, when I have patience, I have, you know, I can be in more of a meditative state. So, and really recognize, you know, who I am. And so I think that one is sort of sticking with me.
Okay, thank you. Do you have it in front of you? Do you want to read it?
Sure. So to cultivate patience.
And then Valerie, I saw that you had your hand up.
For bodhisattvas wishing to accrue a wealth of wholesome virtue and good deeds, all harm is like a precious treasure trove. From other people or adversity, to cultivate a patient attitude, not feeling irritated or abused. This is the way a bodhisattva trains.
Okay, thank you, Angela. Valerie, did you have your hand up? Oh, okay, sorry. Anybody have anything? Deidre.
This is not really about one of the practices, but it's been something that's been on my mind because the giving up attachment is very difficult, like looked at trying to do it directly. And I remember one of the teachings with Lama Narla Rinpoche, it was probably on the Dharma Path, one of the study books, and it says, give up clinging to attachment. Mm-hmm. It's like implying that there's another step there, that you can't just go from giving up attachment right away, but it's the actual clinging to attachment.
Mm-hmm. So maybe, right, go ahead.
Yeah, so that's kind of been something I've been working on, is like giving, when I see it, to see how, what the intensity of it is. And that seems to be the clinging part. So that when I can let that go, it makes the next part a lot easier.
Yeah. So you could start with awareness of your attachment. I mean, I think that's the first step. And then...
of the intensity of it.
Yeah.
It's like the clinging part. It's kind of like, is that the part that, where the loophole?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, yeah. Is that the loophole? I don't know. Anyway, it's just been something that I've been working with, and I wanted to share that because I think it's very difficult to just say, give up attachment.
Yeah.
It's too direct. Yeah.
Well, I think you're right. And I think so much of our discouragement as Dharma practitioners comes from being able to see our patterns and not change them. And I think that what you're saying really speaks to that, and I'm going to put in, like, again, my comment that the first step is to be aware of it. Like, oh, this is attachment. But it's not like you fail if you don't cut through the attachment right on the spot. It's like a whole process. And I like the way that you are presenting it from whatever the source was as a two-step process. Like, just give up being upset that you're attached, for example. Give up clinging to the fact that you're seeing that you have attachment. And that relaxes you. And it also speaks to one of my favorite verses. Like, I was going to bring in that actually one of my favorite verses, are the ones that resonates a lot with me, that I practice with a lot, is the verse 7 on refuge, on taking refuge. It's the last of the preliminaries. And it reads, "Who can the worldly deities protect, themselves imprisoned in samsara's jail? The three jewels which embody freedom's path, reliable protection without fail. To seek refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, this is the way a bodhisattva trains." So what we talked about, one of the things we talked about with regard to that verse, and I brought in a quote from Pema Chödrön talking about a lama from New Zealand, I think, and I realized that it must be the one who taught at KTC in 2016, Karma Samten, because he may have said the same thing when he was teaching, then he was teaching mind training, 7 points of mind training. But this New Zealand Lama, whose name she couldn't remember, said, we should really say, I take refuge in ice cream. You know, I take refuge in, you know, television, like whatever. And so it comes down to whatever, what is it that we do? Like when we're stressed or when we're needy or when we're emotional. And, you know, and so we can look at our behavior in that moment, like, and as we're reaching for the ice cream or the drink or, you know, or about to yell at somebody or about to turn on the TV, we can take a moment. Like if you can just recognize that that's about to happen and that you're doing it because you've lost your vigilance and mindfulness, you've lost control of your actions and you're about to react in a habitual way, you don't have to stop yourself from doing the thing because you might not be able to. But what you can do is take what Pema Chodron calls a pause. She didn't say it in this context, but you can pause and you can take, and what I do with myself, if I find myself about to get caught up again in that same habitual pattern, I take 3 breaths. I say, okay, I'm not going to worry about this, but I'm just going to, before I do anything, before I think that next thought, I'm going to take 3 breaths. And very often by the end of the 3 breaths, I forgot about the thing. But you could eat the ice cream anyway. You know, maybe you can't stop yourself eating the ice cream, but you can do it much more mindfully. And I think that's the key. You know, we're not going to do it all in one fell swoop, whatever it is. And we get so discouraged because we can't that we then give up the whole thing. So I love the idea of a step-by-step. Like you don't have to solve it, but just be aware of it and then give up attachment to solving it. You know, give up, you know, whatever, give up your clinging to your attachment. Anyway, that's what I had to share on verse 7. Was that you, Mark?
Yeah, it was. I was just, okay. I think there's a point there of that subject object thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Verse 22.
Yeah. That it doesn't matter what the object is that you're grasping. It's just the grasping mind.
Yeah.
Now, if you get more on top of that, the grasping mind, then it really doesn't matter what the object is that you're grasping. Right. You can let go of the grasping mind.
Right. And this is how we work on it. We work on it through awareness and through not panicking, as Sitya Rinpoche has put it, not thinking we have to be perfect all at one time, but just awareness is like 90% of it, I think. So we could be happy if we're just aware of what we're about to do, even if we go ahead and do it. Right. We do it with awareness. Yeah, anything further, Mark?
No, that's it. It's like, you know, more important to look at the mind that is grasping than the object.
Yes, well, that's one of my favorite quotes from, what's his name? The wandering 19th century monk. I forgot. I almost had it. But anyway, one of the quotations from his book, it's like Shabkar, right? The Life of Shabkar. I highly recommend that book. It's a biography, but it's just a lovely life of a wandering mendicant monk in like real practitioner in 19th century Tibet. And one of the things he said that I wrote down at the time, and I lost it since then, is don't be sad. Look at the mind that's feeling sadness. And that's it. It doesn't mean you get rid of the feeling, but you turn your attention to where that sadness is coming from. And you rest in that instead of resting in being completely caught in the emotion. And it's this, I think we're talking about the same process.
I agree. Yeah.
Yes. Thanks for bringing that in, Mark. Okay. Who's next? John, we haven't heard from you yet today. Oh, you're going to have to unmute yourself. Can't hear you. There we go. We got you.
Okay, so I'm sure I'm not the only one that sits here and wonders, okay, why, when is this going to happen, or why is it taking so long, or what am I missing? And so I was thinking, and I finally figured out what's been blocking me from committing to letting go, which is what I think that we were talking about, is that we just have to let go of everything. Initially, you know, I signed up thinking, okay, I'm going to get rid of, the sales pitch was get rid of suffering. Okay, but the other half wasn't in there. It was in the fine print. Oh yeah, you got to give up happiness as well. It's like, uh-oh. So now the realization of all this combined, yeah, we got to kind of get rid of everything. And then I have to, once I commit to actually getting past all the fear of doing that, then I think is where it's going to progress. And it's taken me very long to get to that point, realization. I don't know if that's a common thing or if it's just something that I just dealt with or found to figure.
Well, I think it relates to what Lama Jinzong said in response to what Joanne brought up about verse 4, that it's a famous quote by Tilopa, which I'm going to have to probably paraphrase, or Tilopa, I think it's Tilopa, might have been, Tilopa speaking to Naropa, his student. It's not attachment, it's not things that bind you. Probably there's a different word than this. It's not things that bind you, Naropa.
It's not appearances.
It's not appearances. Thank you.
I don't know what it is.
Go on, Lama Jinzong. I know the quote.
No, just you keep going, but it's appearances.
Thank you. It's not appearances that bind you, my son. It's attachment to appearances. So when we say that we're going to give up suffering and happiness, well, things are still going to hurt. And things are still going to make us happy. And that's good. We're not going for a state of, as we've talked about before, some kind of blank, non-emotional state, but we're giving up attachment to, in terms of happiness, we're giving up attachment to thinking that it's in any way lasting, permanent, or meaningful. It's just a fleeting experience. And if you know it's a fleeting experience, it's that man in the lion's suit, right, that we've talked about. I don't know if people remember it, but Mingyur Rinpoche's example of the man in the lion's suit. He said, we need to understand impermanence and the other four thoughts, because it's like if there's a man in a lion's suit behind the door of the room that you're going into, you walk through the door, and if you know that it's a man in a lion's suit, if you've been forewarned, then it's still going to scare you, but you're not going to drop dead. But if you don't know that there's a man in a lion's suit, when he jumps out, you're going to think you're being attacked by a real lion. He's of course, speaking from an Asian, in Asia, they actually have lions who could be behind doors, I guess. But it's like that. So, so we still will still feel like the feelings that cause us suffering and happiness, but it's the attachment to them that gets us. So that's what we're signing up to give up. Yeah, Lama Jinzong is going to, having trouble unmuting you. Can you unmute yourself? I'm not able to unmute you.
Okay. Yeah. I think that this speaks also to the, John, it's that same thing of that resistance to actually leaving your homeland, of giving up what seems so comfortable and what you know. And I think that one of our biggest issues and problems and obstacles as a Westerner is that, first of all, we don't live in a culture that in any way supports this kind of letting go. I mean, we live in a culture that exalts emotionality. And also, that Lama Norla Rinpoche used to say that the big problem for us is that we are addicted to distraction. And we have all the means to be distracted, especially now with phones and everything else. So the point is that as much as we want in our hearts to begin to give up and leave our natural, what feels like our most, comfort zone, as I guess Emma Chodron said, there's no, we're up against society's support, and it's a huge hurdle to jump. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Did we lose? Well, there's just.
I muted myself while. Oh. I probably had to cough or something.
I'm muting myself again.
Mark, yeah.
John, yeah. It's like you don't have to give up happiness. You have to give up the grasping. When you feel happiness, give up the mind that is grasping on the happiness. And then it becomes a lot more real happiness, Because if you cause yourself suffering by grasping on the happiness.
Right. Sounds so easy.
You have to. It's a lot of practice.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of failures. A lot of failures. I remember, I'll tell a story about my 3-year retreat journey, and Lama Jinzong had her own experience of 2 3-year retreats. But in the first year, you're pretty distracted. I mean, you're still thinking about like all the stuff outside and getting used to the new routines and everything. But by the second year, you're really settled in. And I remember the whole second year of my retreat as like you've gone very deep into your mind and you're really seeing your patterns really clearly. And you can't do anything about them. You still keep doing the stuff. And it's so frustrating. And you just feel, I remember there was a certain period in the second year when every thought that came into my mind was a memory of some awful thing I had done in my life. You know, some incredibly stupid thing I had done. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, and it just wouldn't stop. And I'm like, I'm going to be stuck like this for the rest of my life. Just remembering all the stupid and horrible things, all the ways I hurt people, all the ways I failed to help, or, you know, things I said, bugs I killed when I was a kid, flies I swatted. But it did stop. It's like, you have to stay with it. It's coming up. It's almost like a purification. After that particular phase stopped, I was like, okay, maybe that got rid of something. That very painful process. But I think that that's what happens to all of us. We become aware mm-hmm. of, like, it's easy to sort of say, give up attachment to happiness, but it's such a reflex to get sucked into. Like, the good thing happens, or you want the thing, and you think it's going to bring you happy. It's just, we have no control over that process. And so what we're trying to gain little by little is awareness of it so that we can then start to step in. And that's verse 35. Yes, Lama Jinzang, I'm gonna, you're unmuted. Okay.
Oh, I am. Oh, sorry.
I never muted you again.
I mean, the real question we have to ask ourselves is, why am I grasping? And at that moment, it's like, what is it that we grasp at? We only grasp at that which we just presume to be truly existent. So again, we're just grasping at that thought that we're paying attention to it because it's something that's real and therefore demands our attention. And that's like Lama Norlin Rinpoche, one of his first teachings to me, because he spoke very little English, and whatever English he spoke in 86, I certainly didn't understand it. But he would just keep saying to me, who's thinking? So always like coming back to, you know, if I'm grasping at something, it's one thing to say, okay, well, I don't grasp at a, you know, you first grasp at a mirage. And then there's that second where you go, wait a minute, that can't be there. And then you can't see it anymore. You literally cannot perceive it anymore because you know it doesn't actually exist. And it just goes away. And then it comes back again because you forget that. But when you can't do that, which sometimes I find very hard to, you know, oh, that external thing, it's too intellectual. But if I just say at that moment, who's thinking? Yeah. You know, like bringing it back to what is it that's even thinking that thought, that helps. But, you know, it isn't just like grasping. It's that where you can grasp at something, but you're grasping at it because you think it's actually there and existent, and therefore you have to pay attention to it.
Yeah. I think it brings up the Shabkar quote again. You know, don't be sad. Look at the mind that's experiencing sadness. You look back at your mind. And Mingyur Rinpoche uses this a lot, this example a lot. Again, it's an Asian thing, lions, but there's this saying or this truth that, like, when you throw a stick to a dog, the dog chases the stick. And when you throw a stick to a lion, somehow someone knows this, when you throw a stick to a lion, the lion looks back at who threw it. And he says that's how we should be. Like, don't, like, a thought or a sensory perception gets your attention. What you do immediately is look back at where did that come from, which is what Rinpoche was trying to, like, who's doing, he was pointing us to ego clinging, but he didn't have the vocabulary to say it in a, you know, a sort of a complex way. So he said, who's thinking that? Who's sad? And that's what Shabkar is telling us to do too. Who's sad? Oh, let's look back at that. So that's the process. That's the actual process we're talking about, is directing our attention to the mind. And before we go on, because I'm going to forget, I have a book to recommend as summer reading for anybody who hasn't. Anne Sauvé gave me this book. Anne, in the lower left corner of my screen, gave me this book at Lama Norlin Rinpoche's memorial service, because we had talked about it, and I was aware that it existed, but I hadn't gotten it. It came out pretty recently. Single Sufficient Virtue.
It's actually it's a commentary by Kenpo Katar Rinpoche on a text by Kala Rinpoche, the old Kala Rinpoche, our teacher Kala Rinpoche. It's this thick. it's a tiny, tiny book. It's less than 100 pages. It's, oh my God, it's like 56 pages book. So you can read it like in a sitting. It took me 3 days, but you could read it in a sitting.
Could you hold up the bottom so we know who it's written by?
Yeah, it's Kenpo Katar.
Okay.
Kala Rinpoche Kenpo Katar. I guess it's published by Namse Bangzu. It's out of KTD Monastery.
Oh, okay.
You could go there and get it, or you could probably get it cheaper and faster on Amazon. But anyway, Single Sufficient Virtue will get it. We'll get it. Anyway, I hesitated. I'll get to you in just a second, Joanne. I hesitated to recommend it because there's one part of it that's a bit technical about Mahamudra. And I thought this might not be an appropriate book for people who haven't really had those teachings. And then I thought, they published it. Like, this is Kenpo Katar, obviously, with his blessing, they published this book. And it's a very short part. And it's not hard to understand. But if Kenpo Katar thought it was okay to put it out there for the public, then who am I to say, you know, it's too much for anybody. It's just the most concise presentation I've ever seen of the whole path. The clearest explanations. It's, you know, it's not only taught by Kala Rinpoche and the commentary by Kenpo Katar Rinpoche, but it's translated by Yeshe Jamso. Mom, Yeshe Jamso. So it's as good as it gets, like a Dharma presentation. It will, like, it's not for the faint of heart. This is a very frank book. Don't ever think of closing your eyes in meditation again once you've read this book. And he explains it more clearly than I've ever seen what renunciation is. But you won't know he's talking about renunciation because he doesn't use that word, Yeshe Jamso. I had to figure that out. It's called Decisive Resolution, I think. And that is actually like the Tibetan word for what we call renunciation, which sounds so grim. They call definite emergence. And what it means is like renunciation, like it means giving up attachment to samsara, to the suffering and happiness of this life, because you know there's nothing good in it. It's all suffering. And once you've decisively resolved that, that's renunciation. That's definite emergence. And he says, without it, there is no path. And he says the reason that many Dharma practitioners fail is because they don't have that definite resolution. But anyway, he also talks about what practices we need to do. And it makes so much sense. Like, it's really helping me figure out, like, okay, I'm not really doing this in my practice, and I really should do it to have a complete practice. I think it's just a gem of a book. Anne, do you have anything to say about it? You've read it a few times, I think. Do you have any? I have unmuted you, so you don't have to say anything. But
I'm just reading it over and over again, and I find it very, very helpful, profoundly helpful to understanding and to moving forward, or wherever I'm moving.
I think we're all going forward. We can all rest assured. Sitra Mbichi said we only have to improve 1% in this lifetime, and we're good. Thank you, Anne. Thank you for giving me the book, too, because I don't know when I would have read it if you hadn't given it to me. And after she gave it to me, it took me March, April, May, June, 3 months to actually read it. And once I started, like, 3 pages in, I'm like, oh, my God, where has this book been all my life? So anyway, I think it'll be good preparation for Gampopa. It's good conclusion for 37 practices. Joanne, did you still have something you wanted to say?
No, I have to excuse myself, Mama.
Sorry.
At about 2:15, I'm going to have to, I guess, relinquish my attachments to this wonderful group.
Well, we all have to part ways sooner or later, Joanne.
Exactly. I'm practicing verse 4 right now. But I'm looking forward to seeing everyone in September, and I do have the book, and I have been reading it, and hopefully I'll get up to the monastery this summer with Christopher, actually late summer.
I'm kind of looking to try to get up there in the late summer too, so let me know when you know when you're going.
All right, Mama. All right. Take care.
Okay, thank you for joining us, Joanne.
Bye. Goodbye now. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Can I make one quick one here?
Yes. Yes, Mark.
So this is from Trungpa Rinpoche.
Okay.
And he talked about how your subject object duality is really really very present, and all of a sudden you realize that it just turns into this big blue pancake.
Right, the blue pancake. I remember that article.
The sky just falls down and it covers everything. And you realize that it's all your own mind anyway. So.
Okay, we can all carry that image away. Could you say that again? Because I don't quite remember what the blue pancake is.
It's where your subject object duality collapses.
Ah.
And the duality is looking out there in the sky for something.
I have that. I have that article clipped from a magazine years ago, and yeah. I haven't read it in years. It's in my article file, I think. So yeah. I must go back to that.
So, you're maintaining the subject object duality, but you're not sure what the object is. So,
right.
But there's one out there that's going to save you. So instead of that, you just like the whole thing just collapses and you're just with your mind.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Mark. Okay. We have like 3 or 4 minutes left. Anybody have anything else? Oh, Marilyn, I'm sorry, my cursor's not cooperating, but you're now unmuted.
Well, I just want to say that despite the fact that we have a Sangha in our house, it tends to be rather small. And if we're looking for relying on spiritual friends, having this virtual Sangha has been a huge support. So it's just absolutely wonderful to have a Sangha and also to see friends that I knew from before and then get to meet new people. But it really is a major support network, and Zoom is far better than Skype.
Yeah, I agree. A plug for Zoom. Yes, thank you, Marilyn. I feel the same. This is a support community for me as much as for anybody. It's really inspired my study and contemplation and meditation to a really great extent. Just having the continuity of this text. Yeah, Dan?
Yeah, we're getting ready to move to West Virginia, so.
Yeah. Dan's moving. We're losing him.
I know, and I've been very attached to my house these last few days, so I've been studying my mind about that one. So.
Yeah. But you're going to still be with us, right? We hope.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. This is even more important to me than ever could realize, because I'm going to need that, especially when I'm back home. So.
West Virginia, the wilds of West Virginia. Yeah.
In them hills. So.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a different experience. I haven't lived at home for 13 years, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
So.
But. A whole new field of play for Clementine.
Yeah, so it'll be an interesting experience.
Okay, anybody else? And we will miss you in Richmond, Dan. Yes, Valerie, I'm unmuting you.
I feel the same as Marilyn. Everything she says, I feel exactly the same.
What she said, in short. Okay, thank you, Valerie. And every person here is very dear to my heart. I don't know how we would go on without any of you, so you all have to continue to study. We didn't really talk about the next topic. Is anybody not happy with going on to Gampopa? Valerie, we did talk last week a little bit about the death and dying option. Anybody have any comments on next topic? Namdak and then Valerie.
I just wanted to make sure, should we purchase the book, The Jewel Ornament of Liberation, then?
You will want to have a copy. I'm going to unmute Valerie in case she has anything else to say.
Whatever you decide is good.
Okay. Well, I think Gampopa is the best preparation there is for death and dying, as is the 37 practices. Marilyn, did you have something to say, or that was just, hold on, I'm unmuting you. Yeah.
I just want to say that I have two extra copies of the previous translation that I'd be happy to mail to somebody. It's not the most recent translation, but for people who are short of funds, we've got two extra copies of Jewel Ornament of Liberation.
Right, that's the translation by Kenpo Kunjaldson.
So anybody, just somehow or other, go through Lama Children and I'll get your address and send it to you.
Okay, Namdak?
No, I just wanted to say I wouldn't mind having one of those copies from Marilyn.
You have a taker? Okay. Lama Jinzan? Oh, I'm sorry. I think I accidentally muted you. Go ahead.
Which translation are you suggesting people?
I am going to be using Ken Holmes's new one from 2017, Ornament of Liberation.
How different is that from...
It's not different enough to make a difference. If you already have an older translation, you do not need to buy the new one. I will be reading from this one, but there are times when I go back to the Kenpo Kunshot Jalson Jewel Ornament translation. And sometimes I even like Ken's old translation better.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Hold on for a second.
Yeah. Oh, she's getting her book, I think. Anyway, I'm going to be using this one because I think it's the best one. It's the most recent and the best translation. But I have quibbles with even this one. So we'll be mixing and matching a bit, and they all say the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, I see. So
that's Kenpo Kunshot Jalson, and that's
this one is.
Yeah, and that's the Ken Holmes, Jewels of, what is it?
Says the Gems of Dharma, Jewels of Freedom.
Yeah, that's because they were both published around the same time, and Kenpo Kunshot Jalson got the name Jewel Ornament
first.
And then C.G. Rinpoche started saying it's mistranslated, and it really means Ornament of Precious Liberation, that the precious or the jewel goes with liberation, not ornament. And so he titled it accordingly, which makes it easy for us to distinguish this one.
Are you also suggesting that people get the path of
Buddha? Oh, yeah. I think that too will be.
Oh, yeah.
Really, what we're really going to be using the most is Path to Buddhahood by Ringu Tulku. And I'll send all this out by email. And you can certainly get a head start over the summer. But Ringu Tulku, he describes this book not as a commentary, but as an introduction to Jewel Ornament. Jewel Ornament is pretty accessible, but it can also be quite technical and quite long in places. So it's really helpful to have Ringu Tulku. He wrote this book is in English. He taught in English. His English is very good. He translates for the Karmapa and other people. Ringu Tulku is in his, I guess, fifth, probably about my age, maybe around 60 something. Anyway, this is I would say this is indispensable. And if you can't afford both, I would get this one instead of Jewel Ornament or Ornament of Precious Liberation. But if you can have both, that's ideal. Because when I teach this, sometimes I use Jewel Ornament directly. Because there are times when either Ringu Tulku leaves something out that I think is important, or he words it in such a way that I think it's good to have both versions. So anyway, thanks for those questions. I guess we are going to do Gampopa. I think it's a good thing to do. And we got a lot of votes for Gampopa. So, and Valerie, it's definitely a good practice. It's good for death and dying. And I do recommend Trungpa Rinpoche's book, Journey of the Mind, specifically for death and dying, for the bardos. But you know what? A lot of the book is also like, how do you prepare in your lifetime? And it's the same advice, you know, about how to practice. So, you know, I mean, we could learn Poa. I'm not qualified to teach it, but the idea did come up. But it's not the best preparation for dying. If you don't have the basic underpinnings, then Poe is not going to help you. Poe is just a technical little visualization that you can do at the time of death, but you need the path. Yes, Lama Jinzan. Oh, I'm sorry. I think I muted you again when I had never unmuted you. Oh, anyway, you're good now.
I think it's very, very important to realize that Poa, unless done at the exact moment of death, isn't what you want to do. And the reality is that, as we well know, it's like the moment of when we're actually going to sleep and actually go to sleep.
Yeah.
If you're actually aware of it, you're very, that's how developed a practitioner you need to be to truly work with Poa at the moment, you know, because it's a preparatory practice, but it has to be done at the exact moment. So it's something to think about.
I think it's been said the best Poa is to bring your Lama to mind.
Yeah.
Like if you know you're about to be hit by the bus or about to fall off the cliff, or you just fell off and you still have some consciousness, just call on your Lama. And you know, if you don't feel like that kind of a connection with any human Lama, call on the Buddha, call on Gampopa, call on Chenrezi. Just bring one of those images, bring your connection to the Dharma, whatever you feel devotion to, bring that to your mind. That's all the Poa that you really need. The Poa that's taught is really, I think, to satisfy Westerners who like to get special practices. And it's a good practice. It's a good thing to have, but But Gompopa is the best preparation for death that there is. And hopefully we will all get a chance to completely read it before that time comes. All right, well, we are out of time.
One quick comment. Mark. I was in late 60s.
Yeah.
I got my, first into Buddhism via books. And I just want to say I'm grateful to all Westerners who have, got interested enough in it to go to retreats and, do their, especially like you, to do your own translations from Tibetan and all that, so that we're not just stuck with stuff that is, pretty much like maybe the King James Version of the Bible, which is...
It's what Lama Jinsong coined the term Tibeglish.
Yeah, Tibeglish.
Tibeglish.
Yeah, so thank you very much.
Yes, my pleasure. Yes, Angela, I'm going to unmute you. Yeah.
I'm kind of excited to see what Ningguang's book is about, too.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that. Say that again.
And I'm excited to see what Mingo Rinpoche's book, his next book is about death and dying.
So, oh, right. Yes.
He's going to teach on in next year in June, too. So, at the thing at Target Group. So, that might be helpful if people want to look into.
Simple introduction. It is a very profound book on meditation. It's like
Chen Ruizi as well. But if you ever get a chance to read it, I'd love your take on it.
I will read it. I'm going to look for it as soon as we get off. This is his book on meditation, which I highly recommend. Came out years and years ago, and it's a very thin book. And it seems like it's just for beginners because it says advice to beginners. But I read it regularly, and actually, some of it's really not great for beginners. I tried to teach once in New Hampshire. We read this book, we studied this book a couple of times, and we did the Vipassana chapter, and somebody said, why would anybody ever want to do that? It's like it totally ruined their meditation, which is why you don't teach Vipassana to beginners.
The Shinrazy book, too.
It's wonderful.
But it's deep.
Yeah, it's deep. They're all deep. So Death and the Art of Dying. So we have several book recommendations today. All right, I think we probably have to end here. I think we covered everything we needed to. I didn't get to talk about verses 35 and 36, which to me are the core practices that apply to every single other practice, but I laid it all on the line in my post. So if you want to know what I think about those verses, read the post. So we'll do our prayers, our dedication of merit. Now we can dedicate the merit of this entire year of study to the benefit of all beings, and may all beings benefit, directly through our practice, like through our practice will benefit other people, like in our interactions with them and our thoughts of them and our prayers for them. So may they benefit directly from us, and may they just benefit in every possible way, and may they all attain enlightenment, and may we do so too. All right, so we'll... I'm looking to see, I think I might have left somebody unmuted, which would cause a train wreck of sound. Okay, I'm remuting people. All right, I think we're good. So really, let's let our mind come to rest one more time, just out of all the conversations, come to rest in awareness of the body. Take a breath or two. And let's meditate with full attention. Let's dedicate with full attention. This merit may it win omniscience, defeat my faults the enemy, then from the rough and stormy sea of birth, old age, death, and disease, from this ocean of samsara, may I liberate all beings. They know things in their true existence, Kuntu, Zangpo, and Manjushri. To train myself in their example, I dedicate this practice fully. May every being through this practice completely gather merit and wisdom, attaining the two sacred bodies that merit and wisdom emanate.
the blessings of the Buddhakayas, the blessings of changeless Dharmata, the blessings of the steadfast Sangha, this dedication please fulfill. All right, I'm going to unmute everybody. And so we've had some interest in getting to canoe to get together, say weekly, just for a short time, say a half hour at the most, to chant the verses. How many people are actually interested in doing that? Okay, we got a few. Anybody not interested? it's not about, do you want to just do it at the same time, or is there some other time? The same time, that's probably, so 1 o'clock?
Mm-hmm. That would be good.
I'm happy to, it means I don't have to do any preparation. There's no post to write. We're just going to chant the verses and kind of touch base with each other and stay in touch as a sangha. So I can do that. And if I can't do it some week, then we'll skip that week. Yes. Sorry, I did it again, Lama Jinzai. I muted you. Now you're unmuted.
So would you consider leading us in like a 5 or 10 minute meditation before we chant? Because I find that very helpful.
I would. Lama Jinzai, would you be interested in leading some of the meditations?
That's not yet. I feel like you have such, I'm just listening to how you've developed it. So if you don't mind.
So a half hour would be like 10 minutes of meditation and 15 minutes of chanting and 5 minutes of chit chat. Sounds like a good balance to me. That's the 10, what is that? The 10 and 15. Well, I can't do the math. The 1.5 to 2.5 ratio.
All right. 3 to 2 to 1, I guess it is.
Yeah, I'll be here next Thursday at 1 o'clock, and we'll chant the verses.
All right.
Meditation. Great. All righty. Well, everybody. Well, I would say have a really happy summer, and if you can read Single Sufficient Virtue and any other commentaries. But we're going to see each other anyway. So see you next week.